Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Alright, you're very welcome along to the GAA Hour Football Show brought to you by AIB. We're here the morning after an absolutely crazy All-Ireland final. Unbelievable stuff. We said last Thursday, do not concede goals to Dublin. Mayo gave them two goals. Yeah. We said no team outpoints Dublin. Yeah. Mayo outpointed them by 6 points. And at the end of the day, still didn't really win, you know, still didn't win the game. So, you know, where to even start talking about this? It was a bizarre game.
It was. I mean, it was totally unscripted. I don't think, I mean, going into the game, there was so much analysis from so many different mediums. I don't think anyone foresaw what was going to happen. I mean, look, it's so rare to see an own goal in a GAA match, but to see two within 15 minutes in an All-Ireland final was absolutely crazy. Like, in theory, you could say Mayo outscored Dublin 2-15 to 9 points.
Yeah.
But, you know, they didn't come out on top. But, like, to keep Dublin to single-digit points was phenomenal. Like, it really was. And granted, Dublin forwards were off form and stuff like that, but you have to give Mayo huge credit for that because, you know, on the back of Dublin kicking 22 points in the semi-final, I think no one would have thought they'd keep them to even 15, 16 points, really.
Yeah, the weather contributed to it as well, and I think we'll get into a bit of analysis in a little while. First of all, I want to talk about, because the game started off on a huge kind of dramatic twist where the two teams ran out of the
same
tunnel
time,
together.
Yeah.
A race to the hill?
A race across the...
A race for the photo, yeah.
No, it was just dramatic straight away. Yeah. Like, it wasn't quite 2006, but like, yeah, at least we got something like that. Now, there's a lot of conflicting reports about who was right and who was wrong, you know, in this situation. I saw Keith Higgins and Michael Dermacauley having a bit of pushing just before the picture. We didn't see what happened down in the tunnel. But John Casey, and now this is doing the rounds on a lot of different media outlets. John Casey's on Midwest Radio, and this is what they were saying on Midwest Radio about the incident.
We had the sight of Mayo supposed to come out first. They didn't. Dublin arrive. Then Mayo arrive 2 seconds later. Aidan O'Shea and maybe one or two others get tangled. They all head for the bench at the one time. And we very nearly had a repeat of the mill at the hill. Are you surprised?
Not a bit, Michael. I was down on sideline. Killian O'Connor nearly took me clean out of it. Unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. I was just down talking to Robbie Irwin from RTE. And the Dublin team came out. And I couldn't believe to see Killian O'Connor bursting out in the middle of them. And there was Skelton Mike in the tunnel. I had a bird's eye view of it. I couldn't believe it. I'm still shaking after it, Mike. Unbelievable tense affair. It's like Fort Knox down there. Apparently, the Mayo team waited for Dublin to come out. They were meant to be out 6 minutes before, and just spoke to Paul Byrne from RTE and the Sunday game, and he's after telling me Mayo purposely waited, Mike, for 5 minutes because they wanted to, you know, basically let Dublin know the mean business today. And I'm sure you saw it from up here, Mike. Aidan O'Shea and Kevin McMiniman were swinging at each other going across the pitch. There was elbows flying, there was fracas in the tunnel, players going for each other. What a start. Anyone that's not in the ground missed a big start.
All right, so there's just so much wrong with what was said, you know, in that piece of audio. Factually, completely incorrect. And how it's featuring so prominently on, you know, different media organisations, I just don't understand it. First of all, Mayo were not supposed to come out first. Mayo were out second. You know, Mayo were meant to come out 2 minutes after Dublin, and the time is actually in the programme. Dublin were supposed to be out at 56 minutes past two, Mayo out at 58 minutes past two. Like, John Casey's saying things there like that he was shook. Like, you know, a bit of handbags in the tunnel.
That's where I would have started. John Casey saying he was shaking.
This is John Casey, who's involved in the biggest row under Hill 16 yeah. that you're ever going to see. Now, he did fall on the ground pretty early in that row, but at the same time, to say he was shook and make such a big deal out of this, and then to say that Mayo waited for 5 minutes for Dublin just to get this, you yeah. know, to get this going and rattle them. Like, I mean, are we suggesting that Mayo had a spy outside their dressing room? We're waiting to see when Dublin got into the tunnel. I go, let's go, lads. Come on, come on, come on. And they're all just in there twiddling their thumbs. Yeah. Like, it's bizarre.
Look, I mean, we've all been in dressing rooms, you know, and even in dressing rooms in Croke Park. You have your plan in place, your pre-match routine, etc. You're going through everything, getting ready, and then, you know, the last few words from the manager and the players. And sometimes it can be difficult to just time that perfectly because different things happen. Lads might want to run to the toilet or yeah. something like like that, or
because number twos are flowing before.
Yeah, lads are in and out for the, you know, 30 minutes before they get out onto the pitch. So to think that maybe Mayo guys were actually waiting in the tunnel or in the dressing room waiting for that knock on the door for when Dublin come out is completely unrealistic, I'd say.
Yeah, no, it is. Like, and it's very hard to keep those timings right for those reasons that you're saying. And I don't blame Dublin. I don't think it's gamesmanship on Dublin for coming out the two or 3 minutes late. These things happen. Now I can understand that, say, Mayo are going, right, we're 3 minutes over and let's just go. You know what I mean?
That's,
go out, lads.
That's perfectly natural.
We're not waiting for these lads all day, and it just so happened there was no one going to give an inch then when both came at the same time, and it's a natural thing then that there's a shoulder or two thrown, and poor John Casey nearly had a heart attack.
God loves John Casey. But if you're a manager as well, and a good one, which obviously Stephen Rochford is, you can't plan for something like that. I mean, you've had your team talk, you've talked about your tactics, you went through everything one last time. The last thing you want to do then is, right, everyone hang around for 5 minutes for Dublin to come out. I remember in one, it was a minor match, but we had the best team talk you'll ever hear at half time of the game. The manager got everybody, or the coach actually, that we had an idiot of a manager, but the coach at the time was running the show, gave us this amazing team talk. We all bounced up ready to go, and then the manager tried to stop us because he wanted us to collide with his team at half time just in the tunnel. He wanted us to wait for them to come out, and what we actually did is push the manager out of the way and ran out the door. But like, you know, if you're actually a good coach, you know what you're talking about. You can't have this great talk and then just 5 minutes of flatness waiting
but
for
if there was anything, you know, properly physical in the dress in the tunnel, then the whole thing would have escalated completely. But the fact that all, whatever, 60 players came out of the tunnel fine. And obviously there was nothing too serious that took place in there, you know. Because if there was a proper punch thrown or someone got into a row, well then it would have been, all hell would have broken loose at that stage. But all set the players came out onto the pitch, small bit of pushing between, I think, Aidan O'Shea and
McManaman, maybe McManaman, that was that one,
and Michael Darrow was involved in one
Higgins,
as well.
I saw that.
It wasn't anything, nothing. At all. And Mayo went down, got their warm up and started, and 5 minutes later went back and got their picture taken. So
they have
the picture in the bag anyway.
It set the tone for the day, definitely. But the idea that there was any tactics involved in this, and Stephen Rochford actually quoted afterwards saying that these things happen, so you can all nail that on the head. He said, I think we went out a minute after we were supposed to, you know. So like, there's nothing to see here. Please take that stupid YouTube or video down, and we can all move on.
Is there a YouTube video?
There's a YouTube video. No, it's just the audio on the YouTube.
The only thing you need to do is to get cameras in the tunnel for the next day, just in case something happens.
There is cameras actually in the tunnel. I contacted Alan Milton from the GAA today, and I asked him what's going on. Have you any more information? And he said the CCCC are investigating it. So, you know, I think they'll investigate it, and they'll see there was a couple of pushes as two teams come in. You know, if you're both running towards the same tunnel, there's bound to be a collision or two. But like you said, Barry, if two fellas stop to box, there's 25 on each panel coming out after them, and then there's a free for all, and the teams actually don't come out then. You know what I mean? They're just stuck in there. So look,
Royal Rumble, go back.
A Royal Rumble, wouldn't it be brilliant? That would be actually, Leash and you, were you involved in that? I was there actually doing an interview with RTE on the sideline at the time.
I remember your interview, all right.
That was on your dressing room wall.
I think a couple of lads ended up in the little like RTE room or something with Huey Emerson. There was Stuart Patter Andrews and a couple other guys that ended up, and there was a few punches thrown, but again it was dismissed pretty quickly. No, I think I was one of the early ones into the dressing room, so they didn't find out about it till after.
Like, that wasn't planned either. I think that was one of the first ones where both teams, now one team always waits for the other team to leave at half time. But Dublin and Laois, after, you know, a highly charged first half, all landed into the tunnel together. Like, there's a recipe, and you have Huey Emerson and David Sweeney and a few of our kind of hardier boys in there, so there was always going to be something going on. I want to talk about Kieran Kilkenny, lads, because Kieran Kilkenny is, being honest, he's doing my head in. I mean, he's actually doing my head in. I'm struggling to be able to watch him playing football now, and I don't know how Jim Gavin is indulging this fella. Now, I have to say, I loved Kieran Kilkenny when he came up. I watched him as a minor, I watched him as under 21. Incredible intelligence, game intelligence. He's a proper Gael. Like, you know, he knows how to play Gaelic football. He's a brilliant, brilliant player. He has everything. And this year he's changed his style. He's obsessed with possessions. He's given a hand pass and sprinting, looking for another one. Now, the hand pass he's given is not setting somebody free. It's a dull sideways or often backwards hand pass, and not even a good hand pass. When he gets on the ball, then he's pointing at different fellas, telling them where to run. He's trying to be this you know, playmaking supremo who's on the ball and needs to get the return back and then is trying to orchestrate where to go. Kieran, you're much better than that. Stop playing up to this possessions. I'd say his possessions in this modern game when you lance the training, Kieran Kilkenny's tops the possession polls, and then you have down who gave away the ball, unforced errors. Kieran Kilkenny, zero. Jim Gavin must be holding this lad up in front of the whole dressing room saying, this is what we want, because Kieran Kilkenny's head has been turned and his game has changed, and it's changed for the worst as far as I'm concerned.
Well, his game and his role has definitely changed. Like, obviously, at some point, I think it was the Leinster final against Westmeath, they brought him back into the half-back line. James McCarthy had got the knee injury around that time. And obviously, with Jack not being there, they thought he was a good option. Obviously, a lot of teams don't play with six forwards up against Dublin anyway, so they can afford to have him there, which is fine, and it's a bit of more of a reduced role. But yeah, he's definitely playing way too safe, you know.
Isn't he safe?
And like, he's so much better than that, you know. He's one of the best players in the country. I'd love to see Kieran getting on the ball with a lot more purpose and intent, you know, driving forward and kicking scores, because when you saw with a couple of minutes ago, he drove through into a really good position to take a score.
And
miss-soloed it now. But he probably just didn't feel that comfortable being in that position, because he probably hasn't been there for the last couple of months anyway. Yeah. And he's, you know, I think it was Paul Gavin had mentioned about Michael Murphy earlier in the summer. You do get out of the habit of scoring naturally if you're not practicing, or you're not getting into that area on a regular basis. So, you know, he's playing that reduced role of sort of midfield, middle third, and he's just not penetrating the opposition defence as much as he should. And it's not a question of his ability, because he is well able to do it. You know, you'd love to see him hitting a 30, 40 yard pass.
Kick pass
inside and maybe going for the return or something like that. But like, he's as good as anyone about doing that. But, you know, we just haven't seen it in the last few weeks.
He's refusing to kick pass. He's refusing to give any pass that might lose possession. Now, I don't know if these instructions, I don't know what it is, but you have to take risks on a football field. And if you're in a position like him, who's supposed to be this playmaker, playmakers don't play it safe. Playmakers are called playmakers because they make plays. It's not passing it one side or another. And I made a point of him. He's the ultimate hipster footballer. Anyone who doesn't understand Gaelic football thinks he plays well because they see him on the ball a lot. And they just don't have an understanding of what he's doing. He's bluffing his way through a game. I'm telling you now. Yeah. And this is coming from a fella. I want to repeat this. I love Kieran Kilkenny. I just cannot watch him playing football anymore.
But are we taking away from Jim Gavin a little bit? Like, this isn't instructions. Jim Gavin, it's not like he doesn't mind risks. Like, he wants his team to play fast. I mean, for the last 2-3 years, that's what he's been trying to get into their heads.
And
after the whole
I'm only throwing it out there and asking the question, because Kilkenny has changed his game this year, and I'm wondering, is it
instructional
or is it just him deciding himself, I'm loving these stats on a Tuesday night and I want to improve them? And
I wouldn't say Dublin would focus too heavily on the stats. You know, I think they're more developed, they're much better than that, you know, because anyone can throw out any stats and you can manipulate them whatever way you want. So I wouldn't imagine the stats thing would feature too heavily around possessions or turnovers like that from the point of view. But I just think, you know, I think it's just a waste, really, you know, because he is such a good player that if you can get him on the ball probing into the opposition half, instead of going around getting handy ball and giving 1-2s and stuff like that, it'd be so much better. And as Conan said, like, for the last 3 or 4 years, Dublin have just been very good at going for the juggler, like, and going for the scores, going for the attacks. Like, there can be a case can be made at a certain stage of a game you might play that type of role, depending on, you know, that's just game intelligence or game management, but not over 70 minutes.
Instead of giving Connolly that ball at the sideline, he should have played that role.
Like, I mean, ironically, like, I'm giving out about Kilkenny, like, obviously was delighted when he came back from Aussie Rules because I really liked him, but the way his game has changed was perfectly suited for that sideline ball, because he wouldn't have given it away. Yeah. He would have just boringly played a 1-2 out and ran down a minute. Yeah. So how does Connolly trump him in that situation? Like, Jim Gavin's at fault for that too, because Jim Gavin was very close to that.
Jim Gavin needs to step up there and tell him to put it down. But in a way, not on an All Ireland final with a minute left, like, you still want your best players coming over and calling rank and saying, like, I am taking this free kick, I'm taking the sideline.
Responsibility.
I like seeing Jeremy Connolly, the best player I've ever seen, taking the ball off Kieran Kilkenny, but not in that situation. That's where Jim Gavin then has to come on and say, right, I like what you're doing, but not now. Yeah. Kieran,
so obviously
back.
Connolly pulled rank on Kilkenny because they wrestled with it for a while.
Yeah, someone was beside me and they thought the two lads were messing just to kill more seconds or kill the clock. But yeah, it seemed that it was like seniority ranked there, and it was like Dermot wanted it, you know, rather than Kieran. But certainly the play there was to keep it down that end of the pitch, because, you know, you see teams now and again trying to keep the ball in their own half, which is so dangerous. You know, you can keep ball at certain stages of the game, but you have to do it in the opposition half. They were pretty much down in the corner of the pitch, and it would have been a long way back for Mayo.
Long way back.
You know, because as soon as Dermot hit the kick and it was going wide, David Clark had it on the tee, and they were gone up the opposite side within a few seconds.
Unless Dermot was misinformed, because you know what, towards the end of a game when the clock's running down, you say kick it dead, and then the referee will blow it up on the kick out. It's as good as a score. It's that cliche, but it is, because you're giving the referee a chance to check his watch, then the kick out, and a referee likes a natural break in play to do that. But there was a full minute left, Dermot. Yeah. You know what I mean? That was not the right.
Maybe he wasn't aware. Like, maybe. He was like, whatever, 76 on the clock. Surely it's going to be blown up now, you know, whereas 7 minutes were gone and they played into whatever, nearly 79 in total.
I think, in fairness to Kilkenny, he started, and Gavin, he started in the half forward lane, and it was only because James McCarthy had to come off, and they started switching things around, and Kilkenny went a little bit deeper, brought on Andrews, and then he reverted back into that role. And I mean, look, how many players could you have taken off yesterday? It was sort of, maybe he was happy enough that Kilkenny wasn't ballsing up like some of them were.
Yeah, but to be fair, we'll move off Kilkenny now. I don't think it's not because Kilkenny's gone into the half-back line he's doing this. This is in his game even when he's in the half-forward line. He's changed and he's fallen back in the midfield and given the odd, like, dull sideways pass. But not just staying there when he gives a pass. Immediately getting after it, going, here's another possession for me, handy, click, 1-2, he has a little clicker in his sock or something that he's adding him up. I'm joking here now, but you know, I would just love Kieran Kilkenny to forget about this nonsense. I think Jim Gavin has responsibility to say, Kieran, we want more. I don't care if you give Bernard Brogan a pass and it doesn't come off. Bernard Brogan needs supply, Dean Rock needs supply. You've got the brain to do it. You can spot there, not their first run, their cleverer run. You've got the brain to be able to do that. I don't want you hand passing because it's doing our full forward line absolutely no good. And as it stands, all they have is Dermot Connolly to give in a good ball when they could have two good playmakers there. But anyways, that's all. We'll leave Kieran Kilkenny alone now. I think it's constructive criticism, though. We're not exactly lynching him here or anything.
I'm sure he's aware of it himself, you know.
Look to me like he's aware of it.
I'd say he is now, and he'd be looking back on it. I mean, everyone's going to analyse their own performance, but I think the next day you'll see him probing a bit more and definitely playing with his heads up, heading for the goal rather than going sideways towards the stand.
Okay, fair enough. Right, well, I went down to the dressing rooms yesterday after the game. No chance with Dublin players anyways, they were on lockdown, but I got a catch up with Seamus O'Shea and Lee Keegan outside the Mayo dressing room. So Seamus is up first, have a listen. What an incredible game to be involved in.
Yeah, it's hard to make sense of it, right, when you're involved in it, but we gave ourselves plenty of work to do at half-time. We gave away two soft goals and probably a better team most of the first half, but goals killed us within 5 points down, but it was back and forth. We left it fairly late, but we'd get another chance at it anyway.
Where were you playing? Wing forward for a lot of the game?
Yeah, I suppose I was wing back for lots of it, and I was midfield, and I suppose you're just kind of picking up anybody when they come out of defence like that. You're trying to it's all hands on deck, just trying to pick up anybody up who's coming out. So found myself in a few different places, but that's the way it went. Just
what happened at the start of the game? Bring it back. The two teams ran out at the same time, and there was a little bit of aggro even before the picture was taken.
I didn't notice, to be honest, because I was late. I went back in to get my gum shield, so I actually missed it. When I went out, the two teams were separated. So it's the first I heard of it, to be honest.
Okay, and what was said at half time? Because you know, you obviously had those two massive sucker punches of OGs. You know, you kicked most of the football, but then find yourselves, you know, going in down at half time.
There was no major panic, really. Like,
was there not really?
As you said, like, you know, we I have to look at it back, but I thought we probably had the balance of play in the first half.
Yeah.
But them goals, yeah, they were bad giveaways. I was a fault for one of them. Left into them behind me, and they got a goal out of it, and I can't remember the second one, to be honest, but yeah, there were two soft goals. But yeah, on the balance of play, I thought we were going quite well. We were, you know, they just killed us, and there was no major panic, really. We just kind of keep at it, like, and keep doing what we were doing.
Is it difficult in an All-Ireland final not to drop the head, you know, when you're conceding goals like that, especially, you know, with your record in All-Ireland finals?
No, I don't think we'd be known for dropping our heads at any stage, so that's not a problem for us. There was none of that at any stage.
Is it hard not to say, here we go again, though? You know, that's the point I'm trying to make?
Aaron, no, look, I mean, like, you can win games when you can see goals, and, you know, when you don't concede them, you can win them as well. It doesn't make a difference. Like, you know, we had opportunities to win the game even though you concede two goals. Like, but I'm sure people will be talking about it now, but certainly it's an area we need to brush up on a little bit, because we did concede two goals. But look, hopefully we'll do better in it that end the next day.
Yeah, you showed a lot of heart in the last, you know, 7 minutes of extra time. You were 3 points down, and Dublin got three in a row, and it looked like all the momentum was with them. And to get three scores like that when your backs are to the wall, like, it is a huge amount of character.
Yeah, like, it was, I think we got level, and then there was a point in it, and there was all of a sudden then there was 7 minutes of injury time, so it gave us a bit of breathing space, so we didn't have to chase a goal or anything. And to be fair to the boys, that, you know, they didn't really panic, they worked scores, and Killing kicked a great point to equalise it, in fairness. It was good enough from that point of view.
There was some weird black card decisions that, you know, that weren't given. There was some black card decisions that were given. Like, I suppose it was a really difficult game to referee.
How many people got black cards?
James McCarthy got one.
He was the only one, was he?
He was the only one, yeah. But there could have been a few more.
Yeah, there was.
Killian could have got one before he scored the equalising free.
Right. I didn't see that, but to be honest, like, it's hard to tell when you're out on the pitch. Like, you know, this fella's flying around the place. I don't know, maybe there could have been a couple more, but to be fair to the ref, it's hard to call at times. Like, this fella's flying around the place at 100 miles an hour. Like, so I didn't even see James McCarthy's one, to be honest.
What's this rivalry like, Seamus? You know, is there bad blood between the two teams, or, you know, is it just a normal rivalry?
Was there bad blood? Like, you know, we've played each other a lot. Like, we generally tend to be fairly close games, so I wouldn't say there's any bad blood or anything like that. Like, I don't know the Dublin boys particularly well, but no, it's no different than any other rivalry, really, to be honest.
The same verbals that go on in every game.
I don't get involved in that, no, to be honest.
You don't.
Maybe it goes on the other side of the pitch, but not with me anyway.
You were written off for this match, Seamus. You were over 3-1, you know, in some of the bookies. You won't be written off the next day. You know, is the element of surprise gone?
I don't know how it's a surprise that we're competitive in an All Ireland final, like, but he seemed to make us 3-1 underdog. I don't know. That baffles me. But sure, look, if we're underdogs again the next day, we will be, like, so. Make any odds to us, to be honest. Like, sure, Dublin weren't surprised that we were competitive today, and I'm sure we'll be competitive again the next year.
What's the plan now for 2 weeks?
I don't know, to be honest. We'll see what Rochie says now. 2 weeks is, you know, it's a nice break now again, so I suppose we'll be probably take tomorrow off, recover, and probably train Wednesday night, I suppose, and get back at it Wednesday night and again next weekend, I suppose.
Well, Lee, what was said in the dressing room after that game? Absolutely incredible stuff.
Yes, it's probably a bit hard to reflect at the moment. I suppose we're still trying to wind down, a bit of adrenaline still there after the game. But listen, I think overall it's been a mixed bag. We're just, I suppose, delighted to get another shot at it. But I know it's probably hard to put into words how to describe how it went. Listen, it could have went anyway. We're 3 points down with 10 minutes to go. So listen, we show great heart. But the only thing, it's just one of those days where we just have to go and review and look, see what we can do better or where we can improve. But, you know, we've another crack at it, and this group knows what we have to do. We drew it them last year as well, like, so listen, it's just about winning now. You know, a draw isn't good to us anymore. Like, it's getting over the line. That's the key factor for us. So.
You were hit with so many sucker punches. Like, geez, you know, the two fluky goals. You played most of the football, you know, nearly in the 77 minutes.
Yeah, I suppose, and that's, you know, that's football. It's a crazy day. And finally, it throws up crazy stuff, and we're the unfortunate team that were on the end of it. So, listen, we never set back after that. We started well, as you said, there first 10-15 minutes. We were on top of them. I felt we were playing the better football. But I suppose when you look towards the tail end of the first half, we were coughing up some silly possession, dwell on the ball and kicking silly ball away. And that's probably what kind of gave them the incentive to go 5 points ahead at half time. But listen, we regrouped at half time and we just really came out second half. And listen, we had nothing to lose. We just have to go for it. Like, this is all our final day. Like, you know, so, and we know what the team that Dublin have, they're a sensational team. Like, so. But no, listen, we'll review and we'll come back and give another crack again. But this team, this ambitious group here, and I suppose we've been written off all angles this year, and it just shows the character we have in that room there, and we have huge trust in the management and everything. So we're really looking forward to 13 days time again. So.
How difficult was it in that first half? Because I'm sure in your you know, meetings and stuff, you're saying avoid goals, let's avoid goals. You know, the stadium comes alive, and the next minute, not only did you not avoid goals, but you scored two goals further. Was it difficult to keep the head at that stage?
Yeah, I suppose you look at the score and you see probably 2-0. It's probably funny, like, Joe, but no, listen.
They didn't score. No Dublin player scored until 29 minutes.
29 minutes, yeah.
Unbelievable.
So stats were actually good in our favour going up to that period, like. And Joe, people can say Mayo coughed up silly goals again. They're just unfortunate, you know. Conditions really, really didn't help players like that. But listen, that's just something that happened. We, you know, we never look back and said, you know, this is going against us again, or it's, you know, we're not getting the break. We just got on with it, and as he's seen the way we came out second half, that it really didn't affect us, them two goals. And we could have had theirs then and felt sorry for ourselves, but we didn't, because again, it's all our final day. We're not going to look back and think what could have been like before in 12 and 13. So
yeah. So. What about you kept Connolly quiet again today? You have a good record on him.
Yeah, he got the point towards then, I suppose.
That kind of wasn't really your fault, though.
No, but listen, Gerard's a top player, and we all know that. It's well documented at this stage, you know, and we've had great tussles over the last couple of years. As I said, the two of us will do anything to win on the day, and, you know, of course, we had a few run-ins and a few bits and pieces, but that's always going to happen. You can see that over the pitch. There's bits and pieces going on. It's just not us two, but listen, he is one of the best players out there, and I suppose I have to go back and review what I done. Didn't do well and did do well, and I'm sure he's the same, but listen, we'll have another crack each other in 2 weeks' time. Another duel. So
the jersey was hanging off him at one stage. Are you responsible for that?
Looking at the body, I want to see what the body looks like. No, listen, again, just, you know, heated moments out there. It's the pressure sport, so bits like that are going to happen all the time. So.
You do a lot of wrestling off the ball, and you know you're getting inside his head. Do you talk to each other, or is it just a bit of physical stuff?
Just physical stuff. Right. No talking at all, to be honest. Right. Again, he's focused on what he's doing, and I'm focused on what I'm trying to do. I'm a defender, of course, so people always look to me trying to score a point or two. I'm more the type of not conceding scores, to be honest. That's more my game, to be honest.
It is this year, though, isn't it?
Yeah, again, you
more
know,
so.
More so, yeah, and it's something I had to review myself. I suppose I was always looked at as an attacking halfback all the time, but you know, at the end of the day, I'm a defender. I'm a halfback, and that's my primary job, so I'm. Listen, my record's been quite good this year. I think 2 points in 8 games now, so
it's been great.
Speaks for itself, really. Like, but again, it's going to have to. We have to go again in 13 days, and you know, it won't be easy again. So.
And you enjoy that man marking job?
It's not bad. It's going okay. So.
Not as good as kicking points.
No.
Listen, best of luck.
Cheers, Colin. Appreciate it. Thanks.
No matter.
Yeah, lads, Lee Keegan there, and you know, we talked about this huge matchup, and interestingly, he says there's no verbals between the two of them, it's just physical stuff, and like there's plenty of physical stuff. Yeah. The amount of times they wrestle each other to the ground. Now, this is Keegan wrestling Connolly. Connolly doesn't have much interest. He's not an angel, Connolly, but Connolly doesn't want to be on the ground.
Connolly's in good shape, but he's not ripping his own jersey, you know?
I saw the replay of that. Connolly tried to rip Keegan's jersey, and then Keegan just fell to the ground and ripped Connolly. So there's two of them in it now, but when I do watch them, Keegan initiates a lot of the wrestling. Yeah. You know,
as naturally a defender would do it ahead of the forward, all right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the one thing I think Keegan deserves so much credit for this, like, he's cleaned Dermot Connolly out again. Now, and we talked about it on Thursday, Keegan often cleaned Dermot Connolly out of it because he's going forward and Connolly's trying to catch him and he's losing all his energy. But he didn't go forward yesterday. So he actually marked Dermot Connolly out of it without using his offensive side of the game, which is a massive, massive, you know, lot of credit he deserves to just properly man-mark Connolly.
Like, clean out is a strong term. I mean, especially when you've made that pass that Connolly made for Colin Boyce.
That was from a free,
I know,
Colin,
but it's like, you're suggesting that he had no impact on the game.
No, don't say that now, because you can't count. Lee Keegan is not responsible for what Dermot Connolly does from a free. Do you know what I mean? This is the point I'm making. Lee Keegan did his job absolutely brilliantly. The only point Connolly got was from a bad Keegan.
Well, I agree with that, but I would still say that he didn't clean him out. He didn't keep him out of the game. And like, actually, if Brogan and Dean Rock weren't so bloody dire inside, like a couple of balls that Connolly played in, you're like, that's a great ball. The very sturdy left.
He hit a beautiful ball into Vernon Brogan midway through the first half. He drilled it in like a golf shot.
He gives great ball, but I'm saying there's another thing, Dermot Connolly as well. I think I saw a stat, he scored 2 points in all Ireland finals in four. Like, I mean, for this player, this
don't
runs
just
right
go
player.
By stats, though.
No, but I'm not going by stats. But like,
should
be influencing games more than he is. Like, I mean, this is an All Ireland final. The only reason I'm saying this is because the language that is used when people describe Dermot Connolly, like, we're talking about this fella as the player of his generation.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, players of their generation have more impact on All Ireland finals. Like, I know Connolly can play well and do good things, but the greatest, like what he is ability wise, they rise above that good game stuff, like in four.
I agree, it's a good point, but I also think Lee Keegan is such a good player. I don't think he cleaned him out, but I thought he did an absolutely brilliant job, and if I was a manager, that's all you could hope for Lee Keegan to do. He did more than what you could hope for, actually. But even going back, like, I think you were saying, making the point earlier in the summer, that Connolly maybe does too much work and Jim Gavin hasn't been coming back too much, and I sort of dismissed it at the time. Maybe he is, like, if you want them to have this attacking threat, maybe he is going back too much. Like, but it's some great turnovers himself. Like, he won the ball back a lot for Dublin, but he's doing it on his own 45. It's What's he going to do with it then?
He's a team player to a fault, and that's another reason maybe, because a lot of, we talked to Gooch on Friday night, and Gooch talked about just having patience and staying inside the scoring zone, and the hardest thing to do is to have the patience. Berno has the patience, he'll score 2-3. Connolly wants to work. Connolly's not prepared just to stand, you know what I mean, and do that. So like that,
he's willing to put in a shift.
He is, to a fault, probably.
Yeah, I mean, he actually is quite decent at getting back and stripping players coming through.
Very good,
he did it at a couple of the Mayo guys there yesterday, but like Lee Keegan has just been phenomenal in that role. I mean, there's no one better in the country at it. Yes, it's, you know, not even borderline, but like he just plays within the boundaries and gets on with it. And you know, Dermot knew what to expect. You know, he knew he was coming up against them. But and like we spoke about it last Friday, and they were saying that I think it was Gooch and Conor Coghlan were saying about if Dublin would be happy if Lee Keegan and Dermot cancelled each other out. And I was like, not a hope in hell. Like Dublin need more from Dermot Connolly. They really do, because the other forwards aren't firing for a few weeks now. You know, Kieran Kilkenny, Paul Flynn and Bernard Brogan haven't been getting the scores that they were last year, and they're missing out on probably 10-12 points there. So they need Dermot, you know, scoring maybe 4 or 5 in play, or getting 1-3, something like that. And they'll need that the next day. But, you know, up to now, Lee Higgins has done a phenomenal job now in 4 games. I think he's still outscored them in total. Is it 4-3 or something like that from play?
He's outscored. I think he's only conceded 2 from play or something in all the players. But now that you mentioned Dermot Connolly needing to do it because the Dublin line isn't
firing,
you know, firing. Like, will we see Jim Gavin doing a Brian Cody on it and saying, right, Berno, Paul, sorry, in comes Mannion, in comes Andrews, and then suddenly, you know, Jim Gavin gets the plaudits for going, I tell you, at least he changed, you know what I mean? Is there a pressure there, or can you see that happening?
I can see Paddy Andrews starting. You know, he's a club mate of mine and stuff like that, but I'm a big fan of his. And
I'm a huge fan of Paddy
Andrews.
For
2-3 years, I've been saying that Dublin are a better team when Paddy Andrews is in the team. For a number of reasons, you know.
He never seems to be fazed by anything.
Yeah, and like he does open up opportunities for other players. He's unselfish.
His movement is good. And Berno's movement isn't great. Yeah,
and he's brilliant. And he's a great score kicker as well. I mean, 2 semi-finals last year, he got 7 from play against Mayo, and then got 2 within 5 minutes coming off the last day. So in that sense, the black card actually helped Dublin a small bit. So the thing with Paul Mannion, I thought he did well when he came on without threatening the scoreboard. You know, he played well around that middle third, got on a lot of balls, showed a good bit of pace. Again, I probably think he'd be better off coming off the bench. If you start him and he doesn't go well, you know, it's maybe a bit of a waste. So I'd say Paddy's going to come on. There'll be a few lads feeling a bit of pressure the next day, and it's a huge call for Jim Gavin, you know, dropping one of your marquee players, one of your go-to guys for the last few years. How that person would react, you know, you got to factor in, will one of those players be good coming off the bench then? You know, how will they respond to that? Because that's, you know what you're going to get from Mannion off the bench, you know what you're going to get from Paddy Andrews, I suppose, you know what you're going to get from Kevin McMenamin off the bench as well, but maybe some of the other guys who wouldn't be used to it. You just don't know how they're going to respond.
I thought Dublin forwards like were very reluctant to shoot, which is a bizarre thing to say coming off the Kerry game when they scored 22. Berno could have shot, he didn't. Mannion a few times when he came on could have shot a lot of them, and then Kevin McManaman actually does try to shoot. Now it was a terrible effort off his left and then gets pulled off for it, you know what I mean? So it's almost like, am I being punished for actually having the balls to try a shot? Other lads,
there was a reluctance from lads. Now none of the shots were gimmies, but they were still, you still fancied them, you know, they were above 50-50 anyway. And like, I think when one or two players don't do it, all of a sudden it spreads amongst everyone else, because I know a couple of times Michael Darmacaulay got into good shooting positions. Now he would be naturally reluctant to shoot. He's probably told, you know, give it to a shooter type
of
thing.
Wasn't
that one
where he threw it out to Bernard and Bernard couldn't shoot, and Michael Dara could have shot himself. Like, Michael Dara could even run in and hand pass it over there.
Yeah, exactly.
There were loads of times like that. I mean, and that one we mentioned, the Kilkenny going through, and he threw it to Dean Rock, and Dean Rock had no interest in it, and he just threw it to the Mannion, and he ended up just scuffing it wide. But like, there was that was probably the best part of Mayo's performance yesterday. They made these Dublin lads look human. Like, whereas they haven't. They look like a team who, like, nothing bothered them and they could do anything they wanted. And we're sitting here and we're always sort of waxing lyrical about them every single week, but they look like just men who were shitting themselves on the big day.
Yeah, Dublin's kick passing wasn't great either, and like, I suppose kick passing isn't that easy in Croke Park on the skiddy surface.
It did have an effect.
And it looked like Dublin had never had Dublin played in the rain all summer. Like, it looked like they just had no idea how to play.
It didn't bother them last year, 12 months ago they were quite good at it. But I think a few balls into the full forward line, into O'Gara, was it Bernard and even Paddy Andrews, they were just about a foot off what they should be. You know, they were down around your shins and your knees, and on that surface it's very hard to actually make the ball stick. But I mean, there was one passage of play that was very good by Mayo that ended up with Dermot Connolly getting blocked, I think midway through the first half. He jinked a couple of lads, did a semi solo, beat a second, Seamus O'Shea just put out an outstretched arm and managed to get a block on it. And that, you know, those sort of examples really just lift the players and lift the crowd as well when they get a block like that on one of the marquee players.
Yeah, it does. And like, outside of Small, Fenton, Paddy Andrews, you couldn't say that many of the Dublin players like played anywhere well. I thought Johnny Cooper was alright.
Backline were okay. Philly,
in a defensive sense. Why do we see nothing of Cooper and Philly attacking? We saw a bit of Cooper, but it's not the same Cooper, direct Cooper. It was like, again, a kind of hesitant Cooper, whereas in I don't want it, you take it.
Well, it was like, I get to the 45 and go back, whereas maybe in previous games I'm going to keep going. And Philly didn't really get into the opposition half at all, you know. Philly like did a fine job on Aidan O'Shea, not as always, but he just didn't really offer the attacking threat, or just didn't look as positive as he normally can be, you know, on the ball. A couple of misplaced hand passes and kick passes, which were very unlike him, you know.
What was it to do with how Mayo were set up? Like, they seemed very clever. Andy Moore never seemed to venture outside the 21, so maybe Johnny Cooper was thinking, he's not chasing me, they've got enough men back, so I'm just running.
And Andy Moore won a good early ball in behind the fullback line. Maybe he got smothered, or he laid it off for a score. So maybe when a player wins an early ball like that, it maybe keeps you backed up a small. Just a bit more.
You saw the Killian O'Connor and that propping up around their own 45, but you never saw Andy Moore do it. And Roger was probably aware of Cooper.
But in general,
going
Cooper doesn't give a shit about that. Cooper, if you're not going to follow Cooper, that's playing into his hands. Because Cooper just
tough luck.
I'm going anyway. Yeah. And we talked about it last Thursday. He wins a ball, he passes it off, he puts his head down, and he sprints like Usain Bolt. He never did that.
No.
Like, at all. Are Mayo inside Dublin's heads?
I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, the occasion and everything that goes with it. And just,
Occasion is it right up Dublin's alley.
Not the occasion, but just I think the way the game developed, you know, it can have an effect on your game. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes you just you feel like you can't try things or be as brave as maybe you normally would be, and that can have an effect and spread amongst the team, you know.
Yeah, Dean Rock as well. Like, when this melee, maybe Dean Rock set the tone, like, because he was talked about 93% before Sunday. Suddenly then Dublin are going 10 minutes without scoring, 15 minutes without scoring. Dean Rock's missing two or three frees.
The first one was very difficult. It was the hardest one you could get, really, in the right hand corner from about 21 yards.
But he shouldn't really have taken
now he may have scored some of them or from that area earlier in the summer, but it was a tough one to start
out
with.
Even the way he sets his body up for that, I mean, the way his body is, there's no way he can kick this over, you know, and he hooked it too much. I'd go with me left there, no? Like,
well, your left?
With Dean Rock's left, sorry. Definitely not my left.
I don't know. I mean, Dermot can hit freeze with his left as well. I mean,
it's too tight for a right footer.
It is too tight for a right footer. I mean, Cluxon can hit them with his left. Paul Mannion maybe would have been the best one in the whole panel to be there to kick that one with his left. But there was a couple of tough ones now early on for him, but he just... he wasn't striking it as well as he usually can, and the 45, one of the 45s he hit, I think, dropped short off the ground. Maybe the ball conditions and stuff like that, but he just didn't strike through the ball as well as he had done previously.
No, which is a surprise, and I think like that maybe did set the tone. It's hard to know. We're trying to figure out how Dublin were so flat, and like, we'll get on to Mayo in a minute, because obviously Mayo have a huge, you know, bearing on why Dublin were so flat. I think they deserve a lot of the credit.
What was Paul Flynn doing yesterday?
Flynn wasn't in the game really either, and Kevin McLaughlin actually was marking Flynn for most of the game. I was watching him, and like, I was trying to, it took me so long to figure out how Mayo were setting up here. Like, I mean, for the throw in, Vaughan went wing back. Then when the game started going, Vaughan went to midfield. Seamus O'Shea went on James McCarthy, as in you must be watching him going forward. And Kevin McLaughlin came back on Paul Flynn, and Keith Higgins went to full back. So I was like, okay, this is a nice little jig around. I wouldn't have expected Seamus O'Shea. Then Seamus O'Shea was talking to him, obviously, in that interview, and he's saying, I was wing back for a while. You just kind of play wherever. And it's like, what were we actually doing here?
You nearly need a few pauses in the matches just to, okay, let's see where everyone is and who's marking who.
I stopped following the ball for a while and just went, just let me get my head around where everyone's playing.
Someone go injured there for 3 minutes so I can take some proper notes on it.
Crazy stuff. Yeah. And they didn't go with any full-time sweep. Now they drop players back like Dublin do.
Yeah.
They both teams played almost exact same game plans, didn't they? They had to.
But I was very impressed with Kevin McLaughlin's role. You know, I thought it was his best all year. He sort of, he got the combination right and dropping back into certain areas that meant Dublin maybe were reluctant to kick the ball in, and then he also did provide a bit of an attacking threat getting forward, and he delivered a couple of really good balls into the guys inside as well. So he was one guy that, you know, Mayo needed to step up, and I think he did step up yesterday.
They kind of took turns. McLaughlin would be free at some stages because I think Aidan O'Shane, there must be constant communication to get this kind of rotating. Colin Boyle was sweeper for a little while, depending on how many fellas from Dublin that would drop back. See, this new thing now of dropping players back, it's ruining you on the other end, because, like, I mean, when teams do it against Dublin, Dublin will leave Keane and these, and then counter-attack's gone. And with Dublin, the same thing, when their half-back line is dropping back so far, like, I mean, Boyle isn't following, McLaughlin isn't following, and you're kind of caught when you do turn the ball over, because that kind of really fast breakaway isn't always on.
So what was Flynn doing?
Flynn hasn't been playing well. Like, I mean, there's not really an explanation for it. I'd say he can't understand it himself. Like, I mean, and you're watching,
it's just not happening for him.
It's not happening, and he's not able to get into it. And I don't know. Maybe
again, it's not through a lack of work rate or anything like that, because that's just natural for him. You know, he has had groin injuries for the last 2 or 3 years, but he's just, it looks like a fella that needs to score. And, you know, going into last year's final, he wasn't operating brilliantly, but he kicked 2 points in the final and had his best game of the year in the final. And you were probably hoping that would happen again from a Dublin perspective yesterday. But no, he's just not getting on enough ball in the right areas either, you know. So
yeah, who would you drop out if you were going to bring Andrews in? Who would you get rid of?
It's hard to know. I don't know. Like, Jim will have to look at it this week and chat to the lads and look at the video analysis and decide to what way they want to go. Look at the matchups as well that James Horn had. Like, you can't drop. Like, Dermot's not going to be dropped.
No.
You know,
it's between Flynn and Bernard, I think. And McManaman could be unlucky because he could go back into the super sub.
Is Rock after certain,
I think Rock is okay.
If Dean's off, then you go back to who's going to be hitting the frees and the 45s. And
Dean McConnelly or Bernard could hit them over.
I don't think Bernard's overly keen on the frees now. I think going back to 2014, he was on the frees that summer, and in the Donegal game, he wasn't overly comfortable with it. And I think a decision was made that just to let Bernard focus on open play. So there's a lot of analysis left to be done internally in the Dublin setup, starting with from tonight onwards, I'd say.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Flynn and Bernard could go. Like, whether that's right, with the right decision or not, I think Jim Gavin is going to be inspired by Cody, and he's going to go, look, it's not, that did not work. You only get one chance on my team, and he has to set this tone all the time. He cannot allow players be comfortable with two or three bad performances in a row, or else, like, I mean, how do the subs think they ever have a chance to start? You know what I mean? Like, whether to have the guts to do it for an All-Ireland final replay or not. I do think Gavin will do. I have a feeling Gavin's going to make two changes in that forward line, because I think that forward line maybe needs two changes.
Yeah, there may be a small bit predictable over the last few weeks, you know, and like, predictable brilliance, but it was still a bit predictable. And I suppose for Stephen Rocha's point of view, he knew exactly what was going to happen with the six forwards, and he was obviously able to plan accordingly.
But that's what we always say, Katzer. So, like, let's not analyse Dublin, because we know how Dublin are going to play.
Yeah. Predictable brilliance. So here we go again, another bloody goal. Brilliant. Yeah.
Could have done with Jack McCaffrey yesterday.
Yeah, breaking line. Even though John Small was brilliant.
Yeah,
John Small is like, he reminds me so much of Cathair Healy that plays for Leash, like a player I absolutely love. He wears his heart in his sleeve. Like, John Small leaves nothing out in the field, doesn't he? No, it's all out. Yeah. And it's just his style, because other lads can be trying as well, but not sure they're trying in the same way.
Yeah.
Small will just put his head in anywhere, and he's in the action, and he's always there. Like,
in the thick of it, like,
in the thick of it. Yeah. And he's so young and strong.
Yeah.
You know, like, you see him interviewed after, he's a baby face. Like, I mean, for him to be able to perform like that in an All-Ireland final is unbelievable stuff.
He's in great shape, and, like, he has grown. Like, we talked about it last week, he has grown throughout the summer, you know.
He's a naturally strong fella.
Natural strong fella, and he kicked a really good important point as well, you know. So earlier in the summer he was maybe a bit reluctant to get forward, but now you could see, I think it was only a few minutes ago, he went up and I think put up Dublin 1 point up with 5 minutes to go.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying Mayo left their chance behind, but, like, I mean, how can you say, or they'll never get an easier, better chance to beat Dublin? And that's fair enough. You probably never get Dublin on such an off day. But they gave Dublin 6 point head start in Croke Park and still drew with them. Like, I mean, Mayo deserve, I can't get over how much credit Mayo deserve for coming back from the dead nearly three times. Half time, then they went two down, got that back. Then they went three down, said, this game's well and truly over. Forget about it. Then the 7 minutes went up and went, they'll never get three unanswered points in 7 minutes. And they did. They got the three unanswered points.
They had so many opportunities just to give up.
Yeah.
You know, like, it would have been easy for them to do it.
So easy.
And everyone would have said, per Mayo, per player, put in such a big effort. You know, you can't legislate for scoring one on goal, let alone two in an Ireland final. So what can you do? We go back training in December. You know, that would have been it.
Oh, yeah, and they would, like you said, you could understand it. And I tried to get that out of Lee Keegan. And, like, how did you not scramble? Because, like, I mean, you've lost seven All-Irelands, or lost six and drawn one, whatever the record is since 1989, you've just scored two OGs to win 5 points down. Like, is that not, lads, come on, it's the curse, it has to be something. But, like, we're trying here and we're not getting any break off anyone.
There's nothing that they could have done better yesterday. Like, that, they were two freak pure rotten luck goals. Like, that won't happen again. So they went 6 points down, and they had, like, they had no option but to come back. They didn't miss a boat. They had to come back from 6 points down, and they did everything they had to do.
Yeah.
They were matched up as well as they could have been, put on the effort, they, like, the way they played, the way they deployed everything, the way they rattled Dublin, there's nothing they could have done better.
But at half time, they still had a lot to hang on to, because they did outperform Dublin in the first half.
Yeah.
So at least they had that. It's like, okay, you know, we've been better than Dublin here in the first half. Now we're 5 points down.
And Clark made two saves. I was going
Fenton,
to tweet.
Fenton.
I was going to tweet at half time there'd be more Dublin goals. I'm glad I didn't end up tweeting it, but I saw at half time Dublin score more goals because Fenton had been in twice. And I went, you know, they're getting in too easily here.
Yeah.
And plus, a point that needs to be made, right, the two OGs were very, very bad luck. Like, horrible, horrible freak goals. But the defending for both lead up to both goals. Like, Colin Boyle, marking, letting Dean Rock in behind.
Spin around him,
Deirdre Connolly has a bloody free. Do not stay behind him. Let him win it in front.
And have your hand on him, like, you know.
Have your hand on
him. There has to be contact there,
Boyle, concentration levels. He's not a man marker as such. He's a holding kind of strong kind of stopper, but
it looked like a fella who didn't want to be in that position,
was
alien for him, you know,
completely alien. And Fenton got in so easily the couple that time.
Parsons
the first
let
goal,
him go, I think.
Was either Parsons or Seamus O'Shea let him off? A simple 1-2 when he was in. So the OGs were bad luck, but, like, I mean, you can't defend like that.
No, I mean, it was total bad luck, but, you know, you could have said that there was a goal coming maybe for one or two of them anyway.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, they did well to keep out the clean sheet for the rest of the game. But it was crazy to think, like, at half time you're just scratching your head saying how are Dublin 5 points up on this, and, you know, they hadn't scored until the 29th or 30th minute, like, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, like, it was 29-20 or something when they got their first point.
Mm.
And that was a free, wasn't it, from Dean Rock?
Yeah.
Like, holy Christ.
Paddy Andrews then, it was like 31 minutes or something, the first score from play.
Yeah, Paddy kicked two beautiful scores then. Like, and I mean, he loves playing Mayo anyways.
Yeah.
You know, there's just certain teams, we talked about that before. The 2 points were beautiful. And he stayed moving in the second half, but he just didn't get the same shot. You know what I mean? He was on song. He got one really difficult one underneath the Cusick. It wasn't really on. But he sometimes Paddy gets them.
No, he's capable of getting them. That's obviously why he took it on. But yeah, he just flashed across the goal. But he was actually worked out well, because going into the game, I thought Paddy might only get about 15 minutes or 20 minutes because he came in the semi-final and didn't do a huge amount. I know he has a back injury as well, so he's not quite 100%. But it was great that he was coming on, like, only after whatever 25 minutes on a harsh black card, I would have thought.
It was a harsh black card. It was stupid by McCarthy. And, you know, is that down under the black card kind of thing? It is. Probably is an offence by the book. But Lane didn't give that black card. He didn't see it.
It's McQuillan.
Gave that. Lane actually avoided any black card because there was loads of black cards. Killian O'Connor should have got one. Michael Darmacauley should have got one. Michael Darmacauley could have gotten sent off for the clothesline on Killian.
Yeah.
Then you have, who else was in for black card? Aidan O'Shea could have gotten black
Johnny
one.
Cooper,
unless that wasn't in play, so that wasn't. But Lane didn't want to give them.
It was
Quinlan that gave them. So I have a bit of sympathy on Lane. I thought Lane did decently. Like, he did some silly
things. Hang on, a bit of sympathy for not applying the rules?
Well, I tell you why. Because my argument on the black card is, don't give a black card unless it's a Sean Kavanagh black card. Or else just let it play as normal.
The Michael Darmacauley one should have been then.
Yeah, maybe he should have given. Maybe Michael Darmacauley should have given one. But what Michael Darmacauley did was slide in behind him. I kind of tapped him in the hip.
I saw Peter Stringer tweeting. He was impressed by that.
Yeah,
tackle.
But I don't think that was. I don't think he tripped his foot. Now he kind of tapped him on the side of the hip, maybe, or something. Maybe his knees as he slid behind him, tapping him, tripped him. I don't know. When I looked at it again, it didn't seem as bad. But I think referees, and I don't want to talk too long about the black card because it's too much talk about it. hold off on the black card unless it's the most obvious blatant
a rugby tackle. I think maybe if you're blatantly checking a fella, you know, a fella lays off the ball and it's going for the 1-2 and you purposely step out in front of him and body check him off the ball.
Or stopping a goal scoring opportunity or you're true on goal and your jersey's pulled.
But everything else is just too great.
Yellow card.
Let it off.
Don't be too clever about it.
This is the problem though, like that's not the rule at the moment. So he has to just apply the rule, but then because people are like, oh, is that a black card? Is it not a black card? It's sort of plague him a black card anyway. Like that's the problem, and so we're getting so many different interpretations, whereas if they just applied the rules, and some of it might be this is bullshit, he shouldn't get a black card there, well that's change the rule then, but the referee should just apply what the rule is.
Well, I think the offences need to change. I think there's too many offences and it's completely warping referees' minds.
But it's not changed at the minute, so he has to just stick with black and white, unfortunately.
Yeah, he should. But look, I mean, in the interest of a good All-Ireland final, you don't want to see 7 or 8 of the players all gone on black cards. So like, I have sympathy on the referee for reffing it the way he did and not going to town on the black cards and actually just holding off. And it was McQuillan who gave the bloody James McCarthy one, and my heart went out to him, like any player who's given that in another.
I think Dermot O'Connor made a bit of meal out of it, you know.
He did. Now, but Johnny Cooper made a meal out of it. Loads of players are doing this, you know what I mean? Which you can't, it's hard to blame either player, to be honest with you. Like, I'd make a meal out of it if I thought James McCarthy was going to see the line. But James McCarthy was livid. He was absolutely
because I saw him, he went over to the bench, reluctantly went up, and Brian Cullen was trying to get him to sit down and he wouldn't.
He stood there,
you know. I think he was waiting for Joe McQuillan maybe in the tunnel or something.
And will McQuillan get this replay now? Lane doesn't get referees.
No, referee can't get the replay.
I saw Lane blessing himself before the second half and I thought, geez, this is not a good sign of the referees blessing himself.
Like, well, so much had gone on in that game, I might bless myself as well. Quickly on the kickouts, lads, because towards the end Clark had run out of ideas because the short one wasn't on and Mayo seemed to have no idea of a long kick out. This is thing one really bothered me because it was one of the ones Clark gave away for one of the scores and Aidan O'Shea was in the centre half forward position on Philly McMahon. Is he not an option for a long kick?
I thought exactly the same.
And he never gave him one.
The max he was willing to kick it out was like 40 yards and that was his long kick out. Whereas what's wrong with a 75 yard kick out to Aidan O'Shea or a mismatch out there? Even if you lose it, it's not the biggest, not the end of the world.
No,
but
let both midfielders run to the sideline and leave the middle free for Aidan, who has Philly up all ends up as a centre half forward. And it never did. And he was seen bizarre. I've no idea. What am I going to do? And the cornerback's not there. And he's trying to chip it to the halfback.
A 40 yard chipped kick out, all it takes is for a Dublin midfielder to box it back. And it's a scoring opportunity.
Dublin are winning all those breaks, by the way, when they do go to midfield. Like, I mean, Fenton's brilliant at breaking. Fenton's not trying to catch a lot of time. He's actually just knocking it down to somebody that's there, and Dublin seem to have more bodies. And the same against Kerry. Dublin are swarming the breaks. They're good at that. It's like something they're practicing, like, because Fenton's ego isn't that big that he wants to fetch. He's just knocking it down.
But like that hanging kick, you know, if you're the defender and, you know, a teammate or the goalkeeper, it's an absolute nightmare because you're backpedaling. You know, there's probably two Dublin lads coming in behind and they're going to absolutely cream you and win the ball or and knock the ball forward. So, you know, he has to go long more often if he doesn't have the short option available to him.
In all the Cluxton mania, like, as good as Cluxton as his kickouts, like, people seem to forget that there were keepers like Paul Durgan who would just pick out Michael Murphy at centre half forward, like, and then all of a sudden, like, Michael Murphy would either catch it, take on his man, or just flick it down for one of Carl Lacey or Frank McGlynn, and it was deadly effective. Like, what, why aren't we trying to get possession further up the field anymore?
I don't know. And especially the whole thing or whatever with Aidan O'Shea, but Aidan O'Shea is marking Philly, who's not, you know, known for catching a midfield, and Aidan can get up there. And it was not even a case of, all right, it's working back there, when it's completely, it's scrambled back there. Like, because Clark went through nearly a 5 or 6 minutes that Cluxton did against Kerry. Like, he was gone.
Nearly lost the game.
No idea. Like, no idea. Nothing on here. But still refused to just launch.
I mean, like, if he wants plan A to be just chip it out to the full back line, fine.
That's grand.
Plan B has to be, let's go 75 yards. It can't be, the next option can't be just chip think one out and hang my half backs like, you know,
because once you're keeping it away from Fenton, you have a good chance that McCauley's not going to catch a clean over someone's head, and you've Aidan O'Shea as a target man. So look, it just doesn't make any sense. Right, we'll leave it there and we'll be back for performance of the weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D, we're at home, but we're Bernard. I've talked to Bernard about Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest. And there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're
well,
looking
out
at me.
Of a crowded area, isn't
it? You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
AIB, back in club and county.
All right, lads, performance of the weekend. I have three nominees down here. First up, Kieran Kilkenny. I'm joking. okay. First up is Lee Keegan. Purely for cleaning Connolly out of it, which Conan doesn't think he did. But no, listen,
this.
No. But the reason he's getting nominated is because he didn't go forward. He actually just marked his man, and I can't even tell you. For someone who played wing back, and my whole kind of tactics of marking someone was going forward and tiring them out. And when you get back,
demoralising them by going the other way, yeah.
You get back into your position, and the fella you're marking is breathing heavier than you. Because I used to be fit. I says this lad's gone now. He's actually going to be running after me for the day. I'm in absolutely laughing here. And then the sideline might start shouting at him, will you mark him? And he's gone. Yeah. He's absolutely gone. Yeah. But Keegan got the better of Connolly without ever having to do, you know what I mean, do that. Which, because Keegan is such a big engine, so he's definitely in the mix. John Small, we've kind of touched on him as well. You know, brilliant, brilliant young player. Huge fan of his. Love his style. He's a little wrecking ball. And like Katzer said, he has a bit of class. You know, and a lovely little flick of a point on the run, a bit like Fenton, you know what I mean? There was no effort put into that. It was
like a Sean Kavanagh sort of shimmy around.
Aidan O'Shea.
I think he actually soloed it with the left and went round to the right and kicked it with his right foot, you know. So I don't know actually what foot he is.
That's how you know.
Yeah. So.
Who did that to Aidan O'Shea in the previous game? Oh, it was the wing back from, was it Maher from Tipperary?
Bill Maher, maybe.
Bill Maher, I think, left Aidan O'Shea for dead. Aidan needs to practice when a lad's running at him to not be so flat footed. Like, to maybe,
well, he shouldn't be back there.
Yeah.
Probably he was in
not,
a centre back position with a bit of space. You know, that's not good for Mayo.
Yeah. You
know?
But you need to turn your body. Like, this is one of the oldest coaching tricks in the book. Don't be flat footed. If he's running, just run with him.
Yeah, you take his ground.
Take his ground.
Your back pedal, take his ground, and try and get a hand in when he hops or solos
it.
Because
you can't start from a standing position. You at least need to be moving, even if you're moving backwards the direction he's running, you can at least you have a momentum to turn and go with him.
Did you ever do those tackling drills? It happens all the time at club level where the manager telling you, step up on him, when someone's coming running at you, and you're like, if I step up on him, he's just going to waltz past me.
You're meant to run backwards.
Yeah, but like, we always just hear managers roaring at you, step up. Yeah. It's like,
unless he's just about to solo it, then you step 2 feet forward to get a dispossession.
It's the most terrifying thing in the world, trying to get it right, whether you want to step up or not.
Like, one of the greatest ever blocks in the history was Mick Lyons. Remember, he backed off and backed off and backed off. I'm not sure who it was against, and just as he's going to pull the trigger, he ran forward, blocked him down. Unbelievable stuff. It's a famous one. Two of you are looking blankly at me, so I'm not going to get any help on who he blocked down there. Last one is Donald Vaughan. To score 2 points from full back, you know, was a brilliant achievement. Of course he didn't play full back, but he actually had I had an over and back with Shane Curran from Roscommon on Twitter last night. He said Donald Vaughan scored 2 points from full back. Like, it's a brilliant achievement. I says, come on, Shane, were you at the game? He says he didn't reply to that, but I says he didn't play full back at all. He played right in midfield from very early doors.
I had number three in his back though, didn't he?
But Shane also said, now I like Shane, I don't want to take the piss out of him too much, but he came up with a few right corkers last night on Twitter. He also said John Small didn't deserve man of the match because he was a free man, and the reason he was a free man is because he was number seven. Kevin McLaughlin was number 10. Okay. McLaughlin was playing the sweeper, so then John Small had to be free.
Who was marking Dermot O'Connor then, or what?
So, absolute classic. Like, so, like, if you're seven and number 10 is free, well, then no one else, there's no reshuffle could possibly happen here. Just going on the numbers. John Small had a free role. That's another thing we need to mention, is that he kept Dermot O'Connor very quiet. Yeah. Now, Dermot O'Connor did a lot of work in going back, but, like, that's a big job that was given to a young player, and he still was able to keep O'Connor quiet.
Yeah, absolutely. And for Mayo going into the replay, they need more more from the two O'Connors.
They do.
And they need more from the two O'Shays.
Yeah.
Particularly Aidan, you know, he needs to step up for the final.
Yeah,
you know?
We might as well mention Aidan while we're here now, because like Aidan was, I think that's as poor as I've seen Aidan playing in a long time, you know. Not only did he not influence the game like he should have, like he was letting easy balls drop out and not drop off like over his head, into his belly.
He's spilling them.
Like it looked like nerves. Complete nerves on his part, which is unusual. Unless he has
and that shot selection at the end,
that was
just a disaster.
That was like, silly, because that was outside the 45, and that's not his range. I've never seen him doing that before.
I was watching it, saying someone needs to step up and do something. And then I was like, well, not that.
Let's not go overboard. But like another thing is as well, the thing with Killian, like Killian scored 2 points in the second half when you want from your captain, one to equalise it. Now, you're never going to get Killian out in front and doing that. Like, Killian always chips in for 2 or 3 points from play. You know, he does, kind of does his job in that way. Like, I thought Killian was okay. I wouldn't put him in the same bracket as some of the others.
I just like to see more of him from an attacking threat, you know, because he does have a good eye for goal and didn't really get a sniff there. And, I, because he is their captain and their leader, I just think either Mayo get him on more ball or he has to get more ball himself.
That's Andy Moran's job,
he was the one constant.
You have to have the tiers. If you're playing corner forward, you're not the fastest player in the world, and you're playing beside Andy Moran and Aidan O'Shea, you're not going to get a ball. Because they're the first two go-to men. Like, I mean, he needs to not even break for the ball, just try and loop around them. But they didn't.
Living off scraps, maybe a bit.
They didn't hold on to any balls. So that has a knock-on effect on Killian. If Aidan can't hold the ball and he's spilling it, how can Killian loop around him, you know, or get those kind of scores?
What I would have said there was that he should have. Like, he was with Byrne, and not to take away from Byrne, but McMahon was on O'Shea and Cooper was on Moran. So it's like, you've got the weak link there. Like, maybe it's not a complete weak link, but you're the captain.
Yeah, he's the lesser of the three.
You've got the lesser of the three. Go and get the ball, expose it.
But that's not their tactics to go to Killian first. Their tactics is their two go-to men are Andy and Aidan, and that's it in the full forward line. And Killian has a secondary role to them, you know, and if they're getting on good ball and they're winning good ball, which they didn't enough, Killian's kind of out of the loop. And if I'm
he's plan B for both of them, isn't he?
So, you know, he drifted out the field then, maybe out of a bit of desperation and stuff like that. Should actually got the black card, like we mentioned before, and kicked the equalising point. But look, that just summed up the drama of the day.
This is the longest performance of the week ever.
Right, come on, who are you going for then?
Well, quickly, I just want to definitely mention a couple of the Mayo sort of lesser lights who stepped up, because, you know, we felt that they had to do it. And Harrison, McLaughlin, Doherty kicked a brilliant point, you know, and usually he can be very quiet in matches.
And I doubted Harrison here on Thursday. He was great.
But I'm going to go with John Small.
Okay.
And disappointed Brian Fenton's not included. My T1000 terminator.
Yeah, he was good now.
I tell you why he wasn't included, because I said Lee Keegan, John Small. Who else do you think, Conan, before we came on air? And you said Donald Vaughan.
Yeah, I'm definitely taking Donald Vaughan. But I thought, like, they do what he did from fullback, and, you know, to get up the pitch as much as he did. No, I thought he was super. It was exactly what they needed. I know Fenton was so good as well, but it was like there's so many good battles going on. That's what makes these two teams great. Like, that's why I like what Keegan got the better of Connolly, but I just love Watson, that sort of battle. Like, there's no winch given.
Yeah.
But the decision they put Vaughan and Parsons in there was inspired, like, and I thought
Parsons was great, wasn't he? I thought he battled away well. Do you know one thing? When Parsons on the ball, you can kind of relax that he's going to do the right thing with it. Like, he's a very safe player.
Well, he's a nice bit of pace on him as well, so that if you see someone catching up on him, you're comfortable that he is going to bypass him or whatever. Yeah, so you're not going to get caught on it.
You never think he's going to give away the ball stupidly.
Yeah. Everything about him is nice. He looks lovely. He's got great hair. Like, he just looks great. He fell out with James Horn,
didn't he? You know, like, he would have been a great option during that 2013-2014 campaign.
Yeah.
And he only came back last year.
So to sum up, Vaughan.
You're going with Vaughan. Well, I'll go with John Small. So congratulations, John. There's a GAR mug heading your way. So you got the Sunday game man of the match and you get the GAR performance of the weekend. What a weekend, mate. Just finish your career now. You're done. You've done it all. Right, that's all we have time for this week. Thanks to everyone for putting the show together. Follow us on Twitter at sportsjoe_GAA and subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search for the GAA Hour on any of the platforms. And we've 2 more weeks to go before another All-Ireland final. Isn't this brilliant? The year's not over. My girlfriend's really annoyed that it's dragging out for another 2 weeks, but what can you do? Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and
They regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.